It's Thursday, February 28th, 2013. You're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast about retro video games, and sometimes some other things. You're listening to Episode 3, Farming by the Light of the Harvest Moon. Running time for this episode is about 37 minutes.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Jeremy.
And here we are, talking about games.
We're going to talk about Harvest Moon today, eventually. For the Super Nintendo, even, if you played one of the later ones, which I understand most people have. But I want to start with an impromptu question, which was, what was the first video game you ever played?
Oh, my various gods. And I've been playing video games since I was, like, 3. So,
four.
I think maybe Super Mario 3. Yeah, and it's still a great game, so.
It is good. I'm even older than that. My first game ever was Super Mario Bros. Duck Hunt.
Oh, yeah. I played that on my grandparents. I don't know why my grandparents had that, but yeah, I remember that game.
Which I want to lead into. What was the first game you played that wasn't a side-scrolling action game, which is what I thought video games were for a very long time?
Well, Mario-style side-scrolling, or...?
Well, Mega Man would count in that. I'm asking you the question. You can define what it means, because I thought I had an answer and realized it's something else.
So have you ever heard of Willow?
Vaguely?
It's like Zelda. And I don't know which one came out first. I want to say Willow did, but I'm probably very wrong on that point. But it's kind of a isometric from a 45-degree up-in-the-air angle.
On the NES?
Yep, on the NES.
Interesting.
And it was almost entirely like Zelda. I kind of feel it was one of them was a rip-off of the other. I'm not entirely sure which came first, though. So.
Well, Zelda is what a lot of people will say, but I never had Zelda on the NES. So my first one, actually, like I said, is actually Duck Hunt, because... You're pointing at a screen, shooting ducks. It's
an
arcade light gun game on the home console.
I never actually played a Zelda game until Ocarina.
I played Link's Awakening.
Yeah, no, first. Yeah, I definitely played Link's Awakening first. I lied. For the Windfish.
Yeah. So it seems like the first Zelda game. I would not have guessed that.
Then I went and played Oracle of Seasons like years later and realized that they use the same engine.
And Oracle of Ages. Did you play them both? Did you do the thing where if you play one first, and then you have bonuses in the second one, and then at the end you fight Ganon?
Much later, I can never find a copy of Ages.
I got one.
Okay, I have played it now. I emulated it and just did the password system instead of the link system, so...
Also, I had a strategy guide for Ages and Seasons, and I left it at Zach's house, and it became a joke that I would hide it every time he gave it back to me. About a year ago, I finally couldn't do it anymore. I didn't have any place to put it, and he got rid of it. I think he came running out with it to my car as I was leaving. It was like, take this!
It's dangerous to go alone.
Thank you for finishing my joke.
You're welcome. Yeah, I actually remember seeing that at his house a couple of times, so...
Well, I was going to say, the reason I ask is because Harvest Moon 64, much better game than what we played and what I'm probably going to be talking about a lot, because that shaped a large part of my youth.
You know what one of the first games I ever played was? This game!
So, I had Nintendo Power, because I was a good kid, and I saw Harvest Moon 64, and there was something about the way it was presented that I knew I wanted this game. Even though it was a farming game with no action and nothing going on, I wanted this damn game. A lot. And I had a friend who we were band together, actually. Band at Cherokee Trail, my elementary school, met before school. You had to go in at like 5.
Who decided that?
Someone dumb.
Okay, touche.
I was talking to him, he's like, yeah, I got a new video game, and he's being really quiet about it. I'm like, what are you guys? He's like, oh, it's this dumb game. I'm like, oh my god, you got Harvest Moon, didn't you? And he was like, yeah, I did. It's really fun, actually. And we could never explain to anyone why Harvest Moon was fun. And having played the Super Nintendo one, I wonder if maybe it's actually not.
When I played Harvest Moon, I enjoyed the hell out of this game. Like I said, it's Kayla's favorite game still. And there's something about it, it's like, micromanaging in such a way that it's not annoying?
The key to Harvest Moon games is, if you do them wrong, which I think this one actually did, they become worse.
Yeah.
That's when you fail.
And there are a lot of game-breaking glitches, but we'll get there.
Even the 64 one has those. And some of them are even necessary rather than game-breaking, but the game can become worse because it's a game about doing farm work, literally.
Yeah, which, if you've ever worked on a farm, is kind of tedious.
Yeah, and that's the problem with this game, is it got tedious way faster than other ones have.
We probably start this off by saying that neither of us finished this game time around.
When I started this project, I very much wanted it to be, you play the game for a week, and you do your impressions, and if they're positive, we play the game for another week and continue to talk about them. This is the first game that I tapped out of, and we both actually tapped out. He got a little further than me. I got a little more than halfway in. I got to the second summer.
I have a lot of things to say about how poorly paced this game is.
Yeah, and I'm going to say this a lot, too. A problem I think they fixed in Harvest Moon 64.
Which I've never played, so I've heard mostly glowing reviews about it.
The TV Tropes page for Harvest Moon 64 says it's a game that nobody ever played because everyone who has a copy jealously holds on to it. My precious! And they've sadly said they can't put it on Virtual Console because the code is just too much of a mess. Which I believe.
Yeah, given how many random bugs there are in it that are sometimes necessary to do anything.
The N64 one, if you've never played it, it's translated by Natsumi, and you've got the big Natsumi splash page. Then on the title screen, you know, you have the bottom where it's like all the limited liability copyright stuff. Natsumi is their name spelled incorrectly.
Because English is for winners.
Yeah, winners.
Harvest Moon seems to me like one of those games that everyone knows about, but very few people have actually played, or at least no one ever talks about it, so...
They're kind of hard to get started if you haven't before, so I think that might be part of it. Let's, you know, for those of you who never played a Harvest Moon game, let's talk about sort of how it goes. The story as it is that your grandpa owned a farm, and your...
Millionaire parents.
Are they millionaires? It's not really explained.
Yeah, someone specifically mentions that they're millionaires at some point.
Okay, well... You decide you're going to live on the farm and try to raise it, and your parents are very concerned about you. But you want to be independent, and you want to prove that you can do it.
So your parents give you your grandfather's falling to pieces farm and said, here, have fun for a couple of years.
A thing about Harvest Moon games is you need to create your own short-term goals, because the gameplay and all the ones I've played, you go for 2.5 years of game time. You have 30-day months, 4 months per year, and the days last about... 5 minutes?
In this one, they can be never-ending, because as long as you don't go to bed, they will continue.
Well, let's talk about that, because that's something interesting about the game. You are trying to make money is kind of the first goal. You can do that by going to the mountain, harvesting stuff, but in this game, you can only have one item at a time, so that's kind of a poor way to do it.
You can actually carry multiple pieces of equipment to help you farm, but you can only actually carry one item that is not your farming equipment.
Yeah, which you can carry two tools, but and one item, basically, is how I would say.
Yeah, kind of Zelda over your head pot style. So.
Yeah, very much like that. So the easiest way to start making money is to go buy crops. And you have a farm that's littered with debris that you need to use your hammer and your axe to clear.
And robbing wolves and birds and...
Well, the birds are pretty. The birds can actually affect your happiness score and move it up.
But that's something else entirely.
So you have farming, and then eventually you get enough money for livestock. You can have chickens and cows in this one, and cows are the real money makers, and pretty much all the ones I've played.
Yeah.
Because you milk them, and that's profit every day, whereas crops take X time to grow, depending on the crop. There are only four in this one. Corn and tomatoes in the summer. Corn is the uber money maker.
Yeah.
And then potatoes and turnips in the spring. Turnips grow a little faster, but don't sell for as much. The way farming works, you have to clear some land. About a 999 square. It's a grid-based game.
333?
Yeah, 333. You're right. Okay. You're not talking nonsense.
A 3x3 square, totally 9 squares. See?
Yeah.
Logic.
Yeah. And then you plant the seeds in them, and then every day you have to water them with your watering can.
Except for grass.
Yeah, grass you can't sell, but you use to feed your livestock, and it doesn't have to be watered, which, thank God. So it's really a time management game, but... The problem is, a day lasts about 5 minutes, but once you hit 6 o'clock at night, there's no limit to what else you can do. And you can only sell things before 5 o'clock, so there's a little limit there, but you can just sell all your stuff during the day, and then you have infinite time at night to do all your work.
So the limiting factor that they try to put in is that you have stamina, which is this, I guess, invisible number to the player, just somewhere, and every action takes a certain amount of stamina.
And it's not completely invisible. You do have some indications that your stamina is draining. You wipe your, brow and you get sweaty, and then you fall down eventually, and then eventually you run out. But it's super easy to recover.
Yeah, the one problem with this is there is infinite recovery of stamina available on the map.
Though you have to be willing to put a real-life time into it, which this game isn't worth.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to. It's not worth the time. But, so there's this mountain you can go up to, which we talked about harvesting things from earlier. There are grapes you can eat, which restore some random amount of stamina, and a hot spring you can jump into that restores, I think, 48 was the number I read. But every time you jump into it, you restore some stamina. And it's not how long you stay in the hot spring, it's every time you go into it, which took me a while to figure out, as I played on an emulator and fast-forwarded time a lot and wasted, well, I guess you can call it wasting in-game time just sitting there waiting for my stamina to recover.
Yeah, I don't use the hot spring on principle. I never liked it in Harvest Moon 64 and continue to rail against it. I just ate grapes. That was plenty of stamina for me.
Any particular reason?
I did.
Just because.
Yeah. Or in the hot spring with, when Eve was skinny dipping in it. Talk to her. That was about it. So, the goals in the game, you've got make money, you know, which is sort of the classic cocaine addiction thing. You need more money to buy more cows, to do more work, to make more money.
And become a millionaire.
Yeah.
Running a farm.
Of course. But you know anything about science?
The farm science. They teach it in agriculture.
In a Wonderful Life, you get like an automatic milking barn with science that automatically milks and feeds your cows for you.
This sounds like the best way to do cows.
So you have getting livestock as a goal. Actually, the game scores you on a bunch of different axes, and one is how much livestock you have. Another main goal, always the one I was interested in when I played Harvest Moon 64 as a kid, was you're kind of implied that you're supposed to get married. And there are 5 eligible bachelorettes. Mm-hmm. Air quotes for those of you in audio land.
There is basically no distinguishing personality between all of them.
One is blonde.
Yeah, one is blonde. One is a redhead. Yeah. One's a purple-haired devout churchgoer who is probably the most well-defined of them.
Really? I thought the blonde who's got abandonment issues is the most defined. But she's all, tee-hee.
Yeah, there's that.
That's what I ended up going with. But the devout churchgoer is the only one who survives unchanged through Harvest Moon 64. But she has more of a personality there, like, as they all do.
There's also your dog that you get from Ellen. Is that her name?
Ellen, it's something like that. Actually, she was almost who I went with, but...
She's a brunette! That's her decision.
She's really bland. She likes kids. Or not kids, church girl likes kids. She likes animals. That's her personality.
And her dad's a drunkard, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that seems to be pretty heavily implied.
And then there's the redhead's like a... She's the generic mechanic chick. She makes all the things that you can buy at her dad's store.
Which include the sprinkler. Oh, the brush.
Also the milker.
I forgot about those. They're so essential.
Yes, because how could you ever survive without a cow milker?
The thing is, the girls are all kind of bland, but they're by far the most interesting characters out of the town.
Oh, definitely. No one else has anything to say, so...
Which is super depressing, because in Harvest Moon 64, there are some really bad characters that are only as good as the ones here, but most of them are pretty good. And in fact, all of the bachelorettes have a corresponding bachelor that as you befriend, they, you know, they're all like, kind of like, oh man, I really like X, but I'm too shy to talk to her. And you can play matchmaker, and that's, I find really fun to see the personalities meshing up.
That's right, in Harvest Moon, you can raise livestock and play a high school romance at the same time.
Yeah.
The shy suitor thing seems like something that happens in every RPG ever.
Yeah, it happens 5 times in. Actually, one of them is not so shy, but it's more that the girl is sort of a loud, not loudmouth, but she's very contrary. She's the sort of
Tsundere.
She's that kind of person, so.
She gets angry at you for considering her a female.
Yeah.
And angry at you if you don't consider her a female.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks, Japan. You're helping.
Well, it's the girl equivalent of the girl who likes the bad boy, because any, you know, increment of him liking her more is progress. It's the WoW addiction way of suiting. So anyway, that's basically Harvest Moon. There are holidays every once in a while to try and break up the monotony.
They're not well spaced. There's like one per season.
So. And there are none in summer, which is partly because summer is when you're supposed to be doing the most work because you have the most profitable crops.
There are a lot of flaws with this game. The largest of them being that the core mechanic of the game, farming, is really boring, and you don't actually spend a whole lot of time on it.
Not only is it boring, you only have crops in 2 of the 4 seasons, so that's half the game where you literally have no crops.
And so the rest of the time you spend buying gifts or something to try to woo the random woman of her choice.
And taking care of your livestock, which is super monotonous. Every day it's put them feed, talk to them, brush them, harvest their egg milk.
Egg milk. Now an almond flavor.
And that's why I didn't finish the game, was I couldn't sell off my cows, that was my progress, but I didn't want to feed them every goddamn day, and I couldn't just let them die, because they get sick and die if you don't feed them. So, I tapped out, I'm out, I got married to the bar wench.
Yep. I got married to the generic redhead. By the way, the girls fall in love with you based on completely arbitrary things. You can give them items, and they will like you more, depending on what kind of item you give them. Okay. Some of them like certain items more.
Interjection! What video game is that not true? That has a relationship system.
Oh, basically none.
Yeah.
The thing is, especially dating sims, which is basically this is a farming dating sim.
That's
but
true.
Before I get terribly sidetracked, is there any difference between the things that your wife does for you?
No. Your wife doesn't do anything for you other than cook you food.
Basically. Yeah, no, that's what I was wondering.
The bar one gives you beer instead, but mechanically it does the same thing.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
In the 64 one, because as I said, you have to say that's a lot, they do chores for you if they like you, and the chores are different depending on the wife.
Okay, thereby adding some more distinguishing characteristics.
Well, they're actually pretty good personalities. I'm projecting a little bit, but they're all pretty distinct, and some of them are better than others, definitely. But way better than this game.
Your wife will cook for you, which allows you to get more stamina after a while. But as I was saying before, the way you can tell how much they like you is they all have a diary in their room, and it's kind of a crapshoot whether or not you can figure out where their room is in the first couple days of the game.
Oh, I didn't think it was too bad.
Well, especially Ellen, who isn't there when you were supposed to talk to everyone in town,
okay,
and then
true.
She shows up randomly. So this game has multiple endings depending on how well you do. One of the endings you can get is every girl in the town loves you, but you did not marry any of them.
I almost certainly went for that ending. I probably would in the 64 one, because I kind of like all of them to an extent. Although, that would make me sad, because like I said, there are bachelor guys who are trying to get with them, and most of those are the more interesting characters. So those are the ones they really spent time developing, with for the core group of the guys and the girls.
Yeah, well, that's because everyone else basically serves to sell you things, so...
Yeah. And there are a couple other NPCs. Some of them have personalities. Some of them are way better than this game.
Although the delivery truck guy, he's awesome. He probably has some of the most lines in the game.
Some of the most lines.
Yep, some of the most lines. By that, I mean the highest quantity of lines in the game.
Yeah. Well, he sort of serves as your tutorial guy. Tells you what to do, since he's your employer, kind of. In a roundabout way, he's the guy paying you.
For picking up your goods that you just stick in a box, by the way, and hope that no one steals it before he comes and picks up.
Well, there might be a lock in the box that the two of you have the keys to.
But that's okay. No one in this small village is a thief, so...
That's true. Link isn't there.
Yeah. This is awkward wandering peddler that you can sell things to.
Did you get the golden egg?
No, I did not.
I did that. This game does have some events, I guess you'd say. One of which is you can trade a cow for some magic beans, and the magic beans grow a magic bean sock, and you go to the top and you get a golden egg that sells for twice what the cow sells for, which is pretty good.
Well, it's not bad. Can you do this over and
no,
over?
No, you can only do it once.
No. So, really, it's just kind of a... It's an Easter egg or a cow egg.
Golden egg. Well, you go to the top and there's a giant ship. And he's like, did you work hard? And like, yeah, I worked hard. He's like, well, then take this sweet golden egg.
What happens if you tell him you didn't work hard?
I don't know. I believe he's like, go away. Be gone!
Giant chicken will have nothing to do with you. pretty much the most complicated part of this game is figuring out how to plant your crops in such a manner that you can water all of them.
3x3 grid is the classic. That's what I think of when I play Harvest Moon. But it's way easier in this one. You can upgrade your tools. And the upgraded waterer waters everything around you, so it's easier, I found, to just have parallel lines.
Yeah.
And that's still profitable, just not quite as much. But it's way less work.
The problem if you actually do a 3x3 is that you can never get to the one in the middle without cutting one of the ones on the edge.
I accept that. That's part of playing Harvest Moon. Although in 64, the upgraded waterer waters a 9x9 grid.
Yeah, so you're just set. So really, this game just kind of falls apart in its core mechanic, which is farming, because you spend half the game not doing it.
It lacks an attention span. It's fun for about a year, and the game lasts 2.5.
Yeah. I got to the end of 2 years, had a wife and child, and a moderately successful farm, and basically said it just wasn't worth the time. And I remember really enjoying this game the first couple times I played it.
I have hours and hours of my life into Harvest Moon 64. But like I said, I feel that's a game that addresses all these problems. It has more holidays. The holidays have rewards for you, so you sort of are looking forward to and incorporate them in your goals. The characters are all way more interesting, so you have more incentive to talk to them and give them gifts and sort of see where their plot lines are going. There's just more to do. They had sheep, which is not a big deal.
I think the biggest thing I like this game for is that it's something different. Especially for the time when you had mostly side-scrolling action games and occasional random RPGs, you had this, and people were didn't know what to make of it, and that was simultaneously a person of blessing to it.
It's casual, it's very nice. It can be addicting, but it never really grasped me. It doesn't... There's nothing in here. The reward system isn't good enough to keep you invested.
I feel like this game, specifically this game, as opposed to any of the other incarnations of it that came later, would have worked all right as a mobile game of some sort. Played it on a Game Boy, maybe, but...
Yeah, and they did have that. I didn't like the Harvest Moon Game Boy because it's not nearly what 64 is. It's not even quite what this is.
And they have one that's actually for the DS, and I started playing it, but the main hook in it, I guess, is you have to go collect gnomes.
Yeah, I feel like after 64, they really went in weird directions, which I sort of admire them for experimenting, but I got out now of the series because of that. And there are a few who are like, oh, that sounds like what I want in a Harvest Moon game, but I've never actually picked one up. I've just gone back to 64. I bought Rune Factory Frontier, which is Harvest Moon plus Adventure RPG.
Where you
never actually bought it or played it.
Where you use your profits from farming to fund dungeon delving.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like a great concept to me. Yeah. All they need is tower defense, and this would be...
Catching Pokemon. You need to catch some Pokemon.
Oh, that is true. Oh, make it Monster Rancher. You can ranch your monsters, sell monster milk, and then use your monsters... Okay, this is just getting horrible.
You're a game designer. You do it.
No, I'm going for Metroidvania.
Yeah, that's so good. At Pokemon. Everything is better with Pokemon.
That is true. Pokeball, go! I choose you! Cow! Cow, use a splash attack! So that's something that never really made any sense to me, is that in the world of Pokemon, obviously people are need to eat, and so unless everyone's a vegetarian, which doesn't exclude Pokemon, because some Pokemon are also plants.
And Black and White, they thought I'd say they eat Pokemon.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to pray to the spirit of the Pokemon you eat, and you eat them.
Which is why Lavender Town exists.
Yep. The ghost Pokemon place.
Specifically, Milfinx, and how you carry Milfinx around in Pokeballs, and then say... Kapoof! Miltank, I'm gonna milk you now. Miltank! And then you milk it and stick it back in the Pokeball and never get to see the pasture.
Well, there's that farm in Gold and Silver where they have a barn and pasture and they just have Miltanks and Tauros.
And I think one apricorn tree.
Maybe.
And they sell Moo Moo milk, which is, that even by the time you get there, already useless because it's both more expensive and less effective than a Hyper Potion.
So, what were the good parts about Harvest Moon? Best part about Harvest Moon, guys?
The best part about Harvest Moon. I suppose attempting to woo the girls?
Yeah, dating sims are really a guilty pleasure for me. Going back to Harvest Moon and realizing the elements I realize that. I don't play a lot of them, because there aren't a lot of them in the U.S., but seeing your life stock swell, really comparing this to Harvest Moon 64, like I said, it's worse in just about every way, but the farm you get is about 10 times bigger than the one in 64, and that's worse, because it's way more space than you need, and you have about twice as much livestock, but it super slows down the game because it can't quite handle it, and that's worse.
Yeah.
And the holidays aren't very good. That was interesting to see them, because they pretty much all the ones in this come back in 64, but they have more interactive ones, in particular the horse and dog race, which gives your dog a purpose, and they're fun racing minigames that gives you status in the town, and you can bet on them, and that's you need to bet on them to get a bunch of the optional decorations.
Okay, worst part of the game. The core mechanic of the game is simply not fleshed out enough to be interesting for more than about 5 or 10 minutes.
And games like World of Warcraft are fun and interesting because there's a reward structure. You kill 10 rats, which is monotonous, but after you kill 10 rats, you get the power to shoot lightning from your hands! And there's no reward structure here other than getting married, and even that doesn't feel like as big of an event as in the later ones. And honestly, it strips the personality from the girl. She just wears the same white dress every day, standing in the same spot pretty much. She has 2 spots she can go on your ranch, and she just says the same thing to you all the time, which is usually, I'm pregnant! Neither of us got far enough to have kids, did you?
No, I had a kid.
Oh, you had a kid? She was pregnant. She never had
a kid. To be fair, saying that it strips some of their personality is like saying that you stripped a log of its bark after it fell. So there. Yeah, it was
something.
It was kind of there, but their personality wasn't really terribly extant to begin with, so.
I guess that's true. I guess it kind of does the same thing in Harvest Moon 64, but you don't notice as much because there's more events as you're wooing a girl. There's more, like, hanging out with them and having occasions and help find that personality. And they have way more dialogue as they like them more and more. Their dialogue's just, like, 2 times every heart level. So
really, I feel like we played really a lot of bad games that aren't Mega Man.
Lately, I love Castlevania. Maybe my favorite game now. And I don't think Kirby was a bad game. I just think it didn't hold my attention as well as I'd like it to. Even ActRaiser, I gave it a 1, but I didn't dislike it as much as I disliked Sonic, honestly. I just think it was
so bad.
The platforming bits are really bad. I liked playing ActRaiser as an academic exercise, and Sonic was bashing my head against the wall, but it was a better game.
Which is really kind of odd. I think ActRaiser gets points up being unique.
I think that's where all its points come from, which is actually the points we're giving to Harvest Moon, too.
Harvest Moon is by no means a terrible game.
But I'm still giving it a 1. ActRaiser, you've been promoted to 2. Sonic, you're up to 3. Kirby, you're holding steady at 5.
On some sort of arbitrary scale, I'm going to say this game gets like a 5 out of B.
Yeah, I don't think we actually need numbers. I just like the idea of doing it, and it's funny to me.
Well, that's why it's a 5 out of B.
Yeah, I know. Gary Oak, 12 out of 8 gym badges.
He actually went back and demanded more because he's just that awesome. Maybe he just stole some from his groupies.
I believe it's the story given is that he went to other places and got gym badges there because he was bored with Kanto and that droll gym leaders.
So if he went off to Johto, which is the only thing...
Orange Islands? Yeah. Does exist in that universe.
Yeah, I know. It's sad.
Maybe there was a Lavender gym that Ash just didn't know about? Palatown gym?
Well, it turns out that you actually have to have one of your Pokemon die to get to the Lavender Gym, and the Raticate comes in. See, you felt bad this entire time for killing Gary's Raticate, but actually he let you kill his Raticate.
He actually sacrificed it to get some demon Pokemon. Speaking of Wreck-It Ralph, which I saw this weekend, it's good, go see it. They have Bad Guys Anonymous. And they're talking, he's like, that was a really good speech. Satan. Actually, it's Satine.
What's it actually supposed to be, a character or a spin?
No, it's a Red Devil guy. I think it was just making fun of, Mephisto and all the characters that are the devil. But yeah. No, they're not the devil. They're
this
Devlo.
Yeah. They're El Diabolical? I don't know.
Anything else we wanted to hit? Reward structures in video games.
Yes, that's something Harvest Moon didn't do well.
No, exactly. That's how we can transition from it. And World of Warcraft is, I haven't played it in years, and you've never played it, right? So I was going to say, let's use that as the baseline, because I think...
I know about it, so...
Well, it's successful because it has excellent progression.
And I know that's really, a lot of people think that Blizzard actually perfected the system of rewards in games with World of Warcraft.
Well, it's really good, and there have been studies about how it's made to be addicting. How, anytime you're, get done with a section, when you level up, and you're like, I'm going to quit when I level up, they give you new abilities, and they give you new civilian skills that you want to do, and you're like, well, I'll just do my tailoring, and you do that long enough that you want to go back out and fight some monsters.
And that's, really, it's an excellent system, and I think, specifically in Harvest Moon, since we are ostensibly talking about that this episode, is the fact that Harvest Moon's reward system is not well-paced, and I actually completely forgot to talk about this, and how poorly paced Harvest Moon is. And that's, we learned better afterwards, but part of the problem with pacing in Harvest Moon is that your rewards come way too late. You spend all this time taking care of these plants, and you don't get anything out of them for a long time.
There are a few short-term rewards you get, which are the holidays, which, like we said, are not very good. There's getting married, which, like I said, is not what I wanted it to be, at least. It took the personality away. I would have rather gotten the tension. There's getting your first cow, which is always a big thing to me in Harvest Moon games, but that creates more work for you. That creates the cocaine problem. And then there's the ending, which comes way too late. And I think part of the problem, going back to pacing, is for half the game you have crops, for half you don't. You have no farming to do. In the 64 one, there's one crop in fall. It doesn't sell very well. But it is there, still. It's something. And in winter, you can go to a mine, and you have this mine in the game. There are people there, and you can interact with them in ways you can't outside the mines, and there's a little story progression, and there's some side goals in there, and it's really profitable.
Yeah, that, like I said, that's good. For a game without a story, its story pacing, if you will, is terrible. It does a decent job hooking you. I will not lie that the first couple days in the game are kind of fun. But then immediately the tension just drops. There's nothing there.
Like I said, in the 64 one, I think what keeps me invested is the self-challenge, because I know the game really well, and I know, what corners I can cut and where I have to be close. And the characters' personalities are all pretty interesting. I mean, I know them all now, so I can't explore them anymore. But there was that when I was younger. I really enjoyed talking to people, giving them gifts, seeing how they develop. And some of them were always disappointing, because Harvest Moon 64 has some great characters and some ones that are just as bad as the ones here. But there are enough great ones that it's worth, trying them all. There are more hits than misses.
And that's the problem with Harvest Moon, is that your feedback... I guess really it's not so much a lack of reward system, is that you don't really get feedback.
Well, I consider rewards in video games to be any positive feedback. That's probably a broader definition than most people have.
It really depends on how you view feedback in general. If you like feedback at all, regardless of what it is, then it's going to be a reward.
That's true.
So if you like being electrocuted, that's a reward. So,
well, I think in Legends, exploring this, vacant, dead society, that's a reward because it's this interesting thing and you learn a little bit about it. And I think in Halo Reach, for example, is a beautiful game and it's got this really good-looking planet. So I think getting to new levels and seeing new parts of it is a reward in and of itself.
So really, we like exploration games is what we're getting at.
Well, I actually kind of don't. Like, in World of Warcraft, though, I don't consider getting to a new area to be a reward at all. Part of it is I just don't like the art direction there, which is odd because people will go on for days about how good it is. And I really like the one in Old Republic, which is, I think, subjectively terrible. But I'm not a good judge of art, visually speaking.
So, okay, Minecraft. It's a game we both like. I get the feeling that we like it for different reasons, though. So
I like creating things in Minecraft. I really like this sort of claiming territory aspect of it. Okay, this is my spawn spot. I'm going to build a house here. Now I'm going to build a wall around it. Now I'm going to farm in it. Now I'm going to go get some animals and lure them in. And now I'm going to create like an arena to spawn creepers so I can farm gunpowder and have TNT. And now I'm going to set trip mines out there.
So I don't like doing that, but for me the bigger draw is going underground or even overground and finding neat structures or coming across this like a lava cave in the middle of nowhere, and you're like, how the hell am I supposed to traverse this if only I had a bucket of water? I like finding the neat structures and finding the weird twists and turns of caverns, and just, I like finding diamonds more than I like making things out of diamonds, so.
And finding diamonds is exciting. It actually does horror really well, I think, because if you're in a cave, the one thing I like about exploring caves is you never know around what's around the corner. And sometimes it's a zombie. And sometimes there's a zombie behind you now.
And sometimes there's an Enderman behind you, and if you look at him, he just disappears. And
yeah, I'm an Enderman. Cool.
And, well, that's why you add to them, because they're creepier than basically every other enemy. Creepers are more annoying than anything after you've played the game for a while, so.
And they just destroy all that sweet house you built. That's why you go and you get obsidian, and you build your castle walls out of that.
But one of my problems with Minecraft, though, is that I burn out really easily for me. Because I don't think it rewards you fast enough. You can spend really, really a lot of time mining and not get anything.
I think it's just diminishing returns. I think the first time you play, that's all rewards all the time. And the more you play, the more you decide, this is what I like, this is what I'm going to focus on. The other stuff seems annoying or becomes work. And that's a problem. Anytime a game becomes work, which Harvest Moon did, you fail. And that's my problem with World of Warcraft, is it really became work.
But for most people, it isn't, because they like the random noises it makes? I don't know.
Well, and WoW, I think it's, people think it's work that's worthwhile. They see it as exploring, and say, well, I've got to, you know, do all this, but then I get to fight Ragnarok.
So, okay, one of my favorite games in terms of, I guess, immediate gratification that never really seems to peter out for me is Heroes of Might and Magic.
I don't have the same perfection as you do, but I get it.
This is probably one of the few games that let my nostalgia color for me. Everything about the game, something as simple as going to a thing on the map that restores your magic points, makes these fantastic noises, and everything's, like, really grandiose in how over the top it is.
It feels like the, you know, typical fantasy setting taken to 11 where you have magic trains, and it doesn't go that far, but it feels like that sort of grand magic run world. And it is very fantastic. You have unicorns.
Yeah.
You literally have a unicorn that you can stab people with.
In the face.
Yeah.
With your unicorn. I don't know, you get a lot of that, and I don't really ever, something about amassing a ridiculously large army and then going and pummeling people and losing all your army in the process of pummeling people and then going back and getting it again is never really feels like work to me. I actually, so, I told you I got Alex kind of hooked on it, and she actually prefers the mopping up portion of the game to the building up portion of the game. And I can understand the appeal of both, but I definitely prefer the exploration and getting the army.
Now I
using the army.
The strategy game I play a lot of is StarCraft, and StarCraft 2 specifically now. And when I was a kid, power overwhelming, yeah, I wanted to build a huge army and kill some dudes. But the fun part
that's
of the game, the way it's deep, is the resource gathering. It's the jockeying for position. It's a game about taking territory again. It's a game about controlling bases, because bases give you income. And at a high level, you get to this point where you both have an equal number of bases, and you both have max army size, and it's about positioning your army. Because if you attack him, he's just going to attack you and take the same base, and it's null sum. You've got to find a way to position in a way that you're going to have more bases, and you're going to run him dry first. Or you can, you know, take all his mining bases, or destroy his infrastructure, or something like that.
Speaking of taking territory games, have you ever played Hex Empire?
Never heard of it.
It is a random flash game. Oh no, I'll send you the link later. But it's a turn-based strategy game, and strategy very loosely, because there's not a whole lot of depth to it. But you basically have a hex map, and it's mostly randomly generated. The names are random. You move up to 2 squares per turn, and you have armies that can get up to 99 big. And, yes, 99 big. Big is a, that's actually an imperial unit, but,
Okay.
So, you have towns that will, okay, there's basically 3 main things going on. You have morale, and every time you do something, you get more morale, and that can also go up to 99, so your maximum power would be 198. And then, for every territory you have, you get more people in your towns, and it's spread evenly among all your towns. And then you also have ports, which do nothing but further increase your number of units, and then you can also go out to sea with them and land basically anywhere. But it's a game basically about how much territory you control and how you can maneuver your enemy into trying to take territory that is stupid for them to try to take right then.
Territory taking, I think, is a big part about being male. You want to take territory. I don't think we'll go there right now, but... Because I was just thinking about all video games are kind of about taking territory. Side-scrollers, you're taking more and more as you go along. I mean, that's a little bit of a...
That's kind of a stretch, of, or I guess an abstraction of what's actually going on.
That's true.
I think that might be a stretch, but...
Okay.
Yeah, I can definitely see the basis for that. I don't know that I agree with it, though.
I don't think that's the only thing that's about it. I think, like Mario in particular, it's a learning game. It's about learning to time your jumps right. And, you know, performance art really is what I put those kinds of things on. That's what's fun about those to me is, you know, learning it and then being able to do it perfect.
Mega Man is great at that because not only does it make you learn it and basically forces you to do it perfectly, but then you never have to do it again until the culmination level.
Yeah,
but
and then you put it all together. Mega Man is a good game. Go play that.
It is. Speaking of Castlevania and how it's awesome, you know they basically made a remake of it for the Super Nintendo?
Yeah. Castlevania 4 is basically a remake of Castlevania.
Yeah.
I've heard varying things about it. That's definitely on the list. But we have to suffer through 2 first. And then see 3. Some people, I've heard 3 is a lot better than 1. So it has multiple characters. You can play a la carte. You can turn into a bat. And there's one who has magic spells, and one who can wall jump, I think.
Dracula, naming his kid his name in reverse. Because
Nurmagish is a great name.
What?
You're alert. Alert is...
What?
Or I guess you would be Rillet. Rillet.
Oh, my name.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Rillet? Rillet. Best alias ever.
Yeah.
They wouldn't actually be that awesome. Never mind, I take it all back. So, yeah. Jeremy, what's up next?
Since we've been talking about games that are about exploring, and games that are good, hopefully, since we've been playing bad ones, and Mega Man, I just think we could play Metroid next on the NES.
Woo! Little known fact, I love Metroidvanias.
Yeah? Although this is, I wonder if this is pre-Metroidvania. I wonder if this is so early that it's before those ideas. I don't think so, because I've heard the people saying, hey, you should play this without a guide and make your own maps. So.
Really? I'm not sure it has a map.
Oh, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
No.
Oh, well, maybe that's what I hated about it. Maybe. Well, then I should make my own maps.
Or you can look at Nintendo Power Archives, or Game FAQs, which has a picture of a Nintendo Power.
So, next time on Last Time, Metroid!
So, yeah, you can play with us. It's only $5 on the Virtual Console on the Wii. I believe it's on the DS Virtual Console, but I'm not 100% sure.
I don't know. I have one, and I haven't even looked. So,
if you own an NES, I'm pretty sure you can find it on eBay for money. Or if you own an NES, you probably already have it.
So, yeah, Metroid! That'll be fun! There will be shooting and maybe Justin Bailey. Bye!
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2013, fully owned by its hosts. The games, movies, and other media mentioned in this podcast are owned by their respective owners. Obviously, theme songs by me. You can find more episodes and other useful things at lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to email us, you can do so at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to talk to a specific host, Tyler, that's me, can be reached at tyler@lasttimeonvideogames.com, and Jeremy can be reached at jeremy@lasttimeonvideogames.com. This product was tested on animals. My cat did not approve.
I really want to, like, file an official alias form for being Darth and Dedu. Just go hang around cemeteries, and people will be like, what are you doing in the cemetery? I'm like, I'm Darth and Dedu, fool!